we discussed that marriage is the union of two different people. Even though when we're dating, we're looking for someone who's very similar to ourselves, that in most issues we're going to be similar. There are going to be points where each one fills the gaps that the other one has, and each one adds a little bit of color to marriage, but on most issues we have to be very, very similar. Once we get married, as the saying goes, the morning after the wedding, we start discovering how different we really are. And what part of what has to happen is that we criticize. We feel the other side is wrong, and at some point we feel we have to express it. And we have to know, just as we discussed, that compliments bring us close to the other party. When we criticize, that serves to distance us from someone else. Hashem gave us a gift. Hashem gave us the gift of marriage, the ability to connect with someone who is different than us, intrinsically different, someone from the other gender, and build something whole. And this gift is so good, Hashem balanced that gift and gave us the ability to ruin that gift. Just as God made us need marriage, God made it that every person feels very lonely and doesn't want to feel lonely and wants to find a solution to the loneliness and hopes to find it within marriage. And God made it that every person within marriage expects to find a solution to many, many personal issues. And again, this isn't an excuse for people to get married to solve their problems, which is a problem. But even when a person is getting married for all the right reasons, deep down inside there is still a thirst, a need that a person hopes will be met within marriage. But to balance things out, Hashem gave us an instrument, a tool, which will naturally arise within marriage, the tool to distance ourselves from one another, and that is criticism. And we have to be very aware of the harmful effects of this tool, because all too often we think we can get away with it, we're entitled to say it, we're right. We have to know that every ounce of criticism is heard as a thundering voice and serves to distance us from our spouse. Yeah?
It's necessary to criticize, or you can... I know I've heard shiurs from Rabbi Akiva Katz where he seems to say that you really don't need to criticize.
So we'll get to that. When we hear criticism, we have to recognize that who do we criticize? We might criticize our friend. We might criticize our neighbor. We might criticize our neighbor's children. But when we're walking down the street and someone's doing something and it seems to us wrong, more than likely we won't criticize. Criticism is reflective of connection. And so when we hear criticism, we have to recognize that it stems from the fact that we're connected. If a person is married and there is no criticism, then a person knows there's a problem. I was present a few years ago and when there was a couple who didn't say anything negative to one another. And there was plenty of room to say something negative. The husband asked the wife to be prepared, and she decided she's going to go and talk to someone else, and she offered to help someone else at his expense. He had to go. He had an important meeting. He comes in, and she notifies him it's going to take another 45 minutes. He doesn't say a word. And you can see, he's like, okay. It wasn't okay. She just did something major at his expense. He did something at her expense a time earlier, and she didn't say anything. And when I saw this couple, I said, are they on the verge of divorce? I said to myself, quietly. And then I heard they were on the verge of divorce, and everyone was shocked, and I wasn't shocked. I didn't understand why everyone was shocked. It was clear as day. And someone said to me, what do you mean they were the perfect couple? No matter what one side did, the other side didn't criticize the other. And I said, no. I didn't say anything. But to myself, I said, no, they were not the perfect couple. If one side does something to the other side that's just so wrong, not to say anything, I don't see either side as being saints. If I would see them as malachim and everything else they do to everyone else, then I could say, okay, they've worked on their middos, they're perfect, and that's why they don't say anything to one another. But if we're not saints, so then when something happens just not to react, that shows that they're not connected. Part of being connected is that we will react. Now, that doesn't give us a carte blanche. That doesn't mean now we have an open check. I'm connected to you, so I'm going to criticize you. I'm connected to you, so that's why I'm telling you all these hurtful things. No. But when we hear criticism, we should recognize that it's still reflective of something positive. Yeah?
The reaction is necessary. Criticism, the husband can say, I need you to be there now. I've just lost something major. He can say that without saying, you did this to me.
So maybe we'll get to that. I hope we'll get to that. The Torah tells us, Hocheach, tochiach et amitecha, velo tisa alav chet. Rebuke, you shall rebuke your friend, your person of the same nationality, et amitecha, velo tisa alav chet, and do not carry his sin upon him. The Gemara tells us, if I'm not mistaken, in Erechin, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, Tmihani, I wonder, im yesh bidor ze, if there exists in this generation, mi sheyodea leochiach, any person that really knows how to rebuke someone else. How many thousands of years we're talking about? 2,000 years ago? Right? 2,000 years ago? Approximately 2,000 years ago. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, in our generation, the generation of Tanoim, I wonder if there exists a person who knows how to rebuke. This Gemara is really in the middle of a different discussion. The Gemara begins with a discussion of the commandment, V'ahavta l'racha kamocha. We have a commandment to love our friend as ourselves. And then the Gemara says, yes, but there are people who we don't have to love. There are people who we're allowed to hate. Who are we allowed to hate? The Gemara says, David HaMelech said, et misanecha Hashem isna. I hate the people that you hate, God. So we're permitted to hate the people that God hates.
Sorry to disturb Yeshua. We have a problem.
The pasuk says, et misanecha Hashem isna. I hate the people you hate, God. And from here we derive we're allowed to hate the people that God hates. Who does God hate? So the Gemara says, if a person sins, God doesn't hate him. That's not a person that God hates. God hates a person who sinned and was rebuked correctly and then continued to sin. About this Gemara comes along Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and tells us, and in our generation, I wonder if there exists a person who knows how to rebuke correctly. What does that mean? Explains Rashi. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was saying in his generation of Tanaim, he didn't think there existed a person who would know to rebuke correctly, meaning to rebuke in an honorable way, in a way that the person who hears the rebuke won't grimace, his face won't change. You understand what that means? If I come and tell you you're wrong, the initial reaction is to flinch, right? A person that knows how to rebuke correctly will rebuke without the other side flinching. I told you once that the best rebuke I got was from Rabbi Yort. I used to room in his apartment, and he'd talk about something and mention something in passing, and from that I derived that something I had done weeks earlier was wrong. And then I'd ask him, you're telling me about because I did such and such. He'd say, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know. We were discussing this concept in the Gemara or in the Medrash, so this is what it means. He'd say it in a way that we were learning that I would walk away to this day. I don't know if he meant to rebuke me or not. To this day, I didn't flinch. He was just teaching me something as we were talking and learning. He'd mentioned something. From that thing that he mentioned, I learned something I had done weeks earlier was wrong. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says in his generation, he wonders if there is someone who knows how to rebuke. Meaning he's saying basically there isn't anyone who knows how to rebuke. If there isn't anyone who knows how to rebuke, what do we infer from that? Then there's no one that God hates. And there's no one that we are permitted to hate. Because who does God hate? Only someone who, even though he transgressed, someone rebuked him in a way that was correct. But we don't have anyone who knows how to rebuke that way. If you have someone who was rebuked correctly, and he got the rebuke and nonetheless chose to continue sinning, then God hates him. Well, we don't have such a person because we don't have anyone who can rebuke correctly. So then there's no one that God hates already for 2,000 years. Now that doesn't mean we should befriend this person. If we have a person who's a sinner, we're not looking to take a partnership with him. We're not looking to be his neighbor. We're not looking to be right next to him. But at the same time, we are not entitled to hate him. What do we learn from here? In order to properly give over a message of criticism, one has to be very, very smart and very, very in control of what one says and when one says it, if one's purpose is that the other side should get a message. We're going to discuss in a later class that the major purpose of most criticism is a release of our own anxiety, of our anguish, of our anger. That is the main purpose of most criticism, as we will discuss. If the purpose of the criticism is really so that the other side hears and changes, so then it requires great wisdom, as we just discussed. The Pasuk says in Mishlei, Al tochach letz pen yisna'echa. Do not rebuke the joker, lest he hate you. Hochach lechacham, rebuke the wise man, ve'ye'ehaveka, and he will love you. So that Gemara continues to discuss, is there anyone who's wise in their generation of Tanaim? So the Gemara says, an example of Rabbi Akiva, that the Gemara says there were some exceptional Tanaim who were considered wise, that when they were rebuked, they loved the person giving them rebuke. Now let's think for a second. Let's say you were standing out in the hallway and you said, class is about to begin. And someone would tell you, no, it's in another 20 minutes. Would you hate the person? You'd say, no, thank you for correcting me. Now I know I have another 20 minutes. If you were walking down the hallway and someone would stop you and say, you know, your shoelace is untied, would you get upset at the person or would you say, no, thank you very much, I would have tripped? If you're about to go to an important event and your tie isn't fixed and someone stops you and says, I know you're going out there, let me just straighten your tie, would you be upset at the person or would you say, thank you very much? How come is it that for small things, for things that are unimportant, if someone rebukes us, if someone tells us we're wrong, we're appreciative? Someone gives us directions, we say, thank you, I appreciate it, thank you so much. But if someone tries to help us with something that is so much more valuable, with our personality, if someone comes and tells us we're wrong in the way we're behaving, oh, let me add him. We hate him. That's what the Pasuk said. We hate him. Hate. Why? Hashem gave us a gift. Hashem didn't just create us of mud. We aren't just animals. Like the Rambam says, in the discussion of is a human kosher or not, we do not say a human being is not kosher for he does not chew his cud and does not have split hooves. We don't say that, says the Rambam, because a human being is not part of the animal class. We don't say, well, he doesn't fit the criterion. He's an animal and he doesn't chew his cud. No, we don't say that. We begin with saying he's in a class in and of himself. He is human. He is not an animal. So whether eating human flesh is kosher or not is a separate discussion. It has nothing to do with the discussion of kosher animals and non-kosher animals. We are not animals. So even though God created us of flesh and blood, we are not animals. Hashem gave us a neshama. And this neshama, we say every morning, Elokai neshama shenafachta ve'api. Hashem, the neshama that you blew within my nostrils. Yes, we consider it as though each one of us was like Adam Arishan, like Adam. God blew that neshama in our nostrils. We don't say, there's an embryo, and there's an evolvement, and there's a zygote, and there's a... when this meets with that, then it expands. Biology, yes, we have a human. No, we say, Hashem blew that neshama into the nostrils. Elokai neshama shenafachta bi tehorah. That neshama is pure. Ata birata. You created it from nothing. Ata yitzarta. You fashioned it. Ata nefachta bi, and you blew it within me. What's the importance of that? Because we say God took something of him and blew it within us. God gave us a neshama which is godly. By the same token that our physical pulls us down, our neshama is like a flame that's shooting up. And our neshama takes after its creator. Our creator is above everything else. And our neshama too wants to be above everything else. When someone comes and tells us, you are wrong, you are mistaken, you did something that was wrong, our neshama yells out, what do you mean? I'm above everything else. You're knocking me down? That's against my nature. Just like Hashem is above everything else, every person feels like he is above everything else. If we didn't say anything else in this class but this sentence, it would have been worth coming here. Do you realize that every person you look at thinks he's above everyone else? We don't like saying that. We don't like thinking that. But that's the way we are. Every single person prides himself in certain things. And every single person, when he looks at everyone else, feels, I'm better. And no one wants to hear that they're not. And if someone dare tell us that we're not, oh, do we have a word for them? The second point to remember is one level down from Gava, which we just discussed, and that point is where we will pick up next week, and that is the competition. The competition that we think is left outside the door when we walk into a home, in truth is inside the door. Hashem is singular. He's the only one. And by the same token, our neshama likes to feel singular. And this little devil creeps into marriage and can creep also into a father-child relationship. It doesn't belong there in a healthy relationship, but it does creep in. And this is where we're going to pick up next week with the concept of competition that unfortunately very much exists within a marriage. And we'll expand on this Bezrat Hashem next week. This is one of the major hindrances to hearing criticism. We discussed that we don't know how to give criticism. We're not fitting to give criticism. It requires great wisdom to give criticism. And we discussed our intrinsic feelings of greatness that are bothered when we hear criticism. And this point is where we're going to pick up next week, Be'ezat Hashem. No, God willing, if everything goes well, so Be'ezat Hashem, I will not be here the next two Sundays. I'm coming back in 2 weeks from Tuesday. Wednesday, this Wednesday is our last class, Be'ezat Hashem, for 2 weeks. But when we pick up, so Be'ezat Hashem, this is where we'll pick up.